sifter.com.au.
G'day and welcome to Drop Rate by Sifter. I'm Chris Button, and today we're talking about Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, joined by freelance writer Jam Walker and Checkpoint Gaming's Charlie Kelly. But before we get into the discussion, here are the top stories featured on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast.
Hi, I'm Kyle Paletto.
And I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 28th of April.
Embracer is dead. The company will split up into three parts as CEO eats crow after the capitalist implosion reaches a conclusion.
Escape from Tarkov players are up in arms as developers introduce a $250 pay-to-win mode.
Fortnite will let you block those sweaty emotes with strangers that were just a little bit too mean if you want to.
And Fallout 76 hits a massive player milestone after the launch of the TV series.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website sifter.com.au every Sunday.
Articles to read, podcasts to listen to, and videos to watch on sifter.com.au.
Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, the latest entry in the long-running series. There's a lot to sort of start with, because it is a series where we've had lots of characters, lots of different plot lines, and lots of drama in between. Charlie, I'll start with you as best you can with, you know, everything that's come before in this series. What's the concept of Infinite Wealth, and where does it pick up from?
Yeah, so Infinite Wealth is a continuation of Yakuza Like a Dragon. That is kind of like the seventh mainline entry, barring Yakuza 0, the prequel. It's a really interesting kind of unique setup where it largely follows Ichiban, who was introduced in the last game, the turn-based game there, and kind of really follows his story, picking up in a new setting there in Hawaii, but now kind of basically also has the baggage of including Kiryu, the original protagonist's story, in there as well. Lots of high stakes, lots of that. Most recent in the timeline, and definitely the hugest in a really long time.
Absolutely. And Jam, you did the review for Infinite Wealth for Kotaku Australia. And in your review, you mentioned that Infinite Wealth does an unenviable task of trying to make it as approachable to newcomers as possible while tying up a lot of plot threads and continuing a lot of beloved characters from, you know, some years ago. How well does it do this in terms of, you know, balancing the new and the old? And is it actually a decent entry point for newcomers?
Well, in reading everyone else's reviews and tweets and just commentary in general over the last few days, I think I'm one of the minority voices who feel like this isn't a great entry point. I think the previous game was a better one, but even so, the further you get into Infinite Wealth, the more it starts piling on spoilers outright for not just the core stories, but also a lot of the sub-stories of the Kiryu games of old. And as that becomes more of a focus of the back half of the game, I got kind of increasingly more frustrated with it, because I'm someone who, like many people, came on board with Yakuza 0, the prequel, like a few years ago, and the absolutely machine gun rate that these games come out, I feel like we get about 3 a year on average, and how long they are, and the fact that I also like to have a job and sometimes play other video games and talk to my partner, I'm many games behind. I'm one of those terrible people. So I fell off halfway through Yakuza 3. And I got most of the way through Like a Dragon, previous one, Yakuza Like a Dragon. But again, the same thing. I think I like took a trip and then had to pay something else for review. And I was just like, oh, I'll get back to it. And that was a year ago. I don't think it does the best job of sort of appeasing anyone, of hitting any of those targets. But that isn't to say that I didn't love the time I spent with the game anyway.
Of course. And Charlie, I'll throw to you as well, because I think arguably you're the biggest Like a Dragon Yakuza fan I know of. So from your perspective, having, you know, sort of enthusiastically played so many of these games before, How well does it hold up in your estimations of being an entry point for newcomers, or sort of this passing of the torch between series protagonists?
It's an interesting one. I'm definitely with Jam, where it definitely is not far from the easiest one to get into as a newcomer. Even off the back of 7, I feel like it is one where people are going to struggle a little bit. But at the end of the day, it is worth it because there's enough there for newcomers, I feel like, in Ichiban's story. They do a pretty good job balancing the amount that everyone gets and also just the different types of stories they tell. It feels a lot more like a character piece where it's exploring how the two very similar characters of the same side of the coin, more than just, okay, my turn's over, now it's your turn. And I really, really enjoy that for the game. I really like where the game ended up, which is really interesting because it's kind of really unenviable to follow up where Yakuza 6 ended for Kiryu with where he is now. But I think they handled that really, really well. They didn't kind of dig themselves in a hole there. And for every time I was like, okay, this is really going to annoy some people, I would do one of those kind of side activities where you were catching up with all characters from the franchise through these kind of stories. And I would just, all that would melt away. I would just be so happy to see a character I haven't seen in 6 games time. And yeah, it's great. At the end of the day, that's side content. So not the most like horrible thing, but yeah.
With that side content though, and I didn't fully finish all the side content. I loved what I did, but you know, deadline for reviews are a thing. That was something that I found a bit frustrating too, where it really wants you to engage with all that side content, even in as much as how, like, well, the more even the social stuff you do, that grows your characters' relations to each other, which makes them, like, better in combat because they might do follow-up attacks or combos or things like that. It really wants you to invest in everything in order to just kind of level. And the last couple of chapters of the game, I felt like they difficulty spiked very, very sharply. And I found that frustrating because, I mean, I guess it's not really an issue if you want to just sit back and enjoy everything as it comes, which I would have liked to have done. So it's probably less of an issue for most people. But it's, I don't know, it's one of those things where it's just like, I don't like being forced to engage with everything. Like, there comes a point where I think that the narrative does get harmed by the fact that, okay, yeah, we have, like, people in danger and stuff is happening, but I've got to go grind through a bunch of dungeons or help someone with a social problem or blah, 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 help a kid with a lemonade stand. So I think that didn't do the sort of narrative and the structure and the pacing of it any favors either, especially when you're suddenly coming back from having to do a bunch of diverted side stuff to then do hours of mandatory stuff that purely calls back to 4 or 5 games ago.
Look, I totally don't disagree there. It's a tough one. I have played so many of these now. This is the first one that I have felt motivated to do literally everything, but that's just with the way they've put all the side stuff in. I've enjoyed this one the most out of doing everything. I've done almost everything in this.
To take things a step further back, because obviously the Yakuza and Like a Dragon games are known for packing so much stuff into it that sort of, you know, sits there alongside of the main story content, the main plot, and often the sort of main genre of the game. I recall Yakuza 0 with the property management sim and the, I think it was the cabaret club management as well, and there have been other, you know, lots of other very notable sort of bits of pieces or et cetera, sort of separate game modes within the games themselves. But to take things one step further back, this is the second game in the series that sort of has followed the change to turn-based combat from what has previously sort of been more of an action fighting brawler type of gameplay. Has the sort of the turn-based combat from the first Like a Dragon, as subtitled here in the West, the first Like a Dragon game, to this one, has the turn-based combat sort of changed or improved in any way? Charlie, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think it's improved in a lot of meaningful ways. It's just so much easier to read. Now you can very clearly see where all your kind of attacks and where you're knocking enemies into and so on and so off. So you can kind of basically alley-oop enemies into one another and just, you know, really cause damage. That is like satisfying the whole 80 hours I played. There is like small growing pains that I found in the first one that I still kind of find here. I have noticed every now and then the pathway for some of the enemies gets a little bit lost if they get stuck on something, and it takes a little bit for them to adjust a little bit awkwardly. Not super common, but does pop up every now and then. But otherwise, yeah, look, it's a super cool thing. I just wish some of the jobs for the women were better, is the thing that's happening to me again, like last game.
I'll be keen to ask you more about that in a sec, Charlie. But before I do, Jam, your experience of the combat, how was your time? Obviously, you said that there's still a bit of a grind involved, which was something that was leveled at the previous entry in the series. Has it done anything to alleviate that at all, or is it much the same?
I never really got sick of the combat itself. I think it is. It's mostly identical to what it was in the previous game, but it's definitely just more tidily presented. It's cleaner and easier to read and maybe feels a bit snappier. But most of, like, the skills, abilities, like, they're the same. But I distinctly remember, it's been a couple of years since I played one of the old Yakuza games with the beat-em-up combat system. And I, as much as I think they had a very, very good beat-em-up combat system, good God, I got sick of it. Like, in every one of those games, because of how often you get into fights in the street in those games, street fights, if you will, it just got tiresome, like, physically, with my thumbs, tiresome. But one thing I love about the combat system in this game is that when you get to Kiryu, he's turn-based, but his combat system emulates the old beat-em-up style, and it's delightful. So yeah, that stuff I thought was still great. It's, again, that difficulties curve in the back half, kind of, I hate that it kind of soured me in the end. And I mean, look, the one thing I kept thinking about was one of the most commonly hailed, you know, best games of all time in the last decade is Bloodborne. But the one thing that universally everyone hates about Bloodborne is the Chalice Dungeons, is these randomly generated instance dungeons that you have to go into for, like, certain side stuff. And both of this game and the last game essentially do Chalice Dungeons. And it's just like, why? Why? Why inflict this upon us again?
And I suppose the driving force behind the combat in the Like a Dragon and Yakuza games is this very heavily dramatic, melodramatic sort of plot that sits at the core of the series. And it's very well known at this point how serious it can be one moment, and then the juxtaposition into, you know, the downright goofy, the downright silly, and very often very heartfelt. But that's also a lot to do with the characters, and especially the series favorite, Kiryu. And now Ichiban, in terms of the characters, Charlie, I know you absolutely love Kiryu as a character. What is it about him that you find such a great video game protagonist?
I think it's the selflessness and just how much he goes through, but also kind of bears the brunt of so much while helping others. I just found so compelling across all these games. Even the weaker kind of Yakuza games for me are still pretty good games. I really like the tones they set, even some of the themes they touch on, and just the stoicness of it all. While still remaining human, still showing emotions somewhat, Kiryu always really nails that, and I think it is one of his best kind of arcs, what he goes through in this game. And yeah, it's really amalgamates into something lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you think Ichiban sort of holds up as, sort of the, I suppose, the new poster child for the series, for lack of a better word?
Really good as well. Like I said, it feels very much like a story where you're kind of seeing how they kind of have similar hands dealt to them. You know, they were both people that were, you know, imprisoned for doing the wrong kind of things that they didn't actually do, and how it affects them kind of returning to life and kind of being this kind of fish out of water in this kind of, you know, Yakuza world. I find that super compelling. And Ichiban's spin on that, where he kind of has the kind of lifelike and youth of it all while being, you know, brunted at the worst of times with some of the most horrific stuff, I think is incredibly charming. I think it is very, very a good reprieve that we need for Yakuza.
Yeah, yeah. Any thoughts you'd like to add to that, Jam?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both very, very similar characters. Their backstories are very similar. And I think they're actually both quite sort of not personality-less. And I think, like, Ichiban has a bit more flair than Kiryu ever did, but I think by design, they're kind of just like good-hearted, not really blank slates, but just like, I don't know. Like, I mean, everyone talks about, like, you know, the memes are all about, like, Goro Majima and that kind of stuff, and springing out of the ground with witches' hats on and going, Kiryu-chan, and attacking people in silly costumes. But if you played as Majima for a whole game, even if it was like a linear 8-hour game, I think you'd get sick of it. Like, I think you have to have your protagonist be a bit bland to spend 80 hours with them facing this tonal whiplash back and forth of like pretty damn serious dark storyline and utterly ridiculous stuff, or it wouldn't work. None of it would work.
It's almost like, and for mine, I probably wouldn't see Kiryu as bland as such, but in terms of perhaps a foil to the events that happen around him.
Straight man is a better term, yeah.
Yeah. No, I get you. And that's the interesting thing is that I think for me, I find the Yakuza and Like a Dragon games, from what I've played, they have really interesting explorations and I suppose deconstructions of masculinity and sort of what it means to be a man and what men should be expected to do or how to act and that sort of thing. And I think that the characters, especially Kiryu, embodies that in a really interesting way in terms of he's someone who stoically stands up for justice and what is right according to his moral compass. But he also has a lot of room for empathy for others and, letting people show their emotions. But I think one of the things that the series has struggled with, and Charlie, you alluded to this earlier, is in terms of the portrayal of some of its women. There are some good women characters in the series, but they are quite often, a lot of women are shown to be either damsels in distress or side characters or, maybe portrayed less favorably. Charlie, what did you observe of the women in Infinite Wealth?
It's interesting, yeah. I feel like with at least the past few games, they're getting one step forward, two steps back with the kind of representation with women. So they're all really, really good characters that they've introduced, each with their own kind of good motivations and everything, and have good stories to tell. But then you get to the mechanics of it all, and they are having roles like being a maid, being a hostess, being an idol, doing all this stuff, while men are like, got RPG jobs like samurai, they've got RPG jobs like a gunslinger, stuff like that. I think there's a lot of room to grow in that, and that it's really kind of sorely lacking in that regard. And it kind of really hurts to see that still kind of happening. It is a little bit of the crux of the franchise being a bit irreverent. So, of course, you're going to maybe throw some of those on the women roles, but it is still unfortunate, yeah.
Yeah, especially when, it's sort of in isolation in terms of, yes, women can embody these roles for sure, but if those are the only roles that are made available, then that's sort of where the issue arises. Jam, what did you think in terms of the game's sort of representation and in terms of, its characters or themes? They're out.
With the class system and stuff, I had much the same feeling. I kind of hated that there was one female character who I had wearing like literal dominatrix gear, wielding a big like mallet thing through the back half of the game, just because that class build kind of suited my team dynamic the best. And because a lot of the different like classes, jobs, whatever you want to call them, are unlocked through like quest chains that aren't necessarily spelled out clearly, this is how you unlock this class that you know about, because you know about it when you go to like craft weapons and stuff. You can see, oh, gunslinger, what is that? How do I unlock that? It can be a bit limiting because you might only have a kind of not great representative option, and it doesn't really make clear the fact of how you could change it to something possibly better. But as for like the writing and that kind of stuff and the actual story and the stuff that those characters go through, I thought, great, on the whole, none of that came up in those areas. It was running really that.
Yeah, and in terms of the overall story and sort of the concept of Infinite Wealth as a whole, am I correct in saying that this is the first in the series that hasn't been set mainly in Japan? Is that right for Infinite Wealth? Yeah, In terms of this setting, because one of the things that has been so synonymous with the Yakuza and Like a Dragon series is its really faithful replication and recreation of iconic Japanese landmarks and locations, namely Kamurocho. But now for the first time, it's jumped into Hawaii, which, of course, Hawaii does have a very strong Japanese migrant population. So there is still a Japanese connection there. But in terms of how well this location sort of serves the gameplay. Charlie, how did you find your time sort of exploring this new Hawaiian setting?
Really, really liked it. I really enjoyed that we got to play this during an Australian summer. It's just been really, really warm, and I've been playing this like very summery game. It's been really nice with that. And yeah, look, it still feels a lot like a Dragon, a lot like Yakuza, even though you're in this entirely different country. You are going through these environments that are so lifelike in their design. You know, like a kind of grungy district opens up to a shopping area, opens up to a beach, and it's all kind of channels and works together in nice ways. And it's the biggest map they've done yet. But because of little touch-ups they've done where it makes stuff like traveling easier via the Segway and stuff like that, it doesn't feel huge and gigantic compared to the other games. Definitely feels bigger, but it feels worth it. Every inch of that map, I just grew to know intimately. And yeah, likewise, the activities that you're doing there feel very common for those areas, and I really liked them.
Yeah, it still retains that density, even though it's so much larger and detail.
Yeah, and one of the things we touched on a little bit earlier as well is because the games are so well known for their, you know, almost having an entirely different game within a game. I know a lot of noise has been made about Infinite Wealth, about sort of the resort management mode of Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth. Jam, what did you make of this mode, and how does it hold up to some of the series sort of previous, you know, very substantial games within a games?
So just to go behind the curtain a little bit, I distinctly remember a few days out from the embargo for reviews being due, David, the editor-in-chief of Kotaku Australia, dropping me a line asking me how I was getting on with the game, and I said, I should probably get back to the main story because I spent five straight long nights just playing through the entirety of Dendoko Island, the Animal Crossing game, because it is that damn good. Look, so often with these games, these side, it's hard to even call them mini games because they're so fully fleshed out and like fully fledged. I feel like someone came up with a joke and then they just committed to the bit so hard that they could have released it as a $20 game in their own right. And I think Dendoko Island is the best they've done yet. It's ludicrously detailed and deep.
It really feels like a good combination of a bunch of those different games before. It feels a lot like the business management sim of 7, where you're building something up from the start. It also does feel like the real estate kind of management and that as well, because you're worrying about the economics and stuff like that, like while you're kind of tending to what your island looks like. You're doing your dailies and stuff like that, and it fits perfectly for this game. And I too lost a lot of hours. I lost dozens of hours in this, yeah.
It's so perfectly stupid, though, as well. Like, you're not just, it's not like Animal Crossing where you're building twee little villages. It's like,
yeah,
it's all the assets from the main game. So it's just, yeah, let's just drop an 8-story building with a cabaret club in it in the middle of our resort island surrounded by little fishing, like,
yeah,
and lounge chairs. And it's fabulous.
And this is what really grabbed my attention during sort of the lead up to Infinite Wealth is, you know, this resort management minigame, which I saw, you know, from early hands-on people describing as like an Animal Crossing-like game. Can we sort of dive a little bit deeper, Jam? What exactly is involved in this mode in terms of, you know, managing this resort?
So at the start of, I think, remember it's chapter 5, you can't miss it because you will be taken there for at least a few, like, in-game nights. You have to do the first few stages of Dendoko Island forces you to. You wash up on this little island where there's a couple of people who are like, yeah, it used to be a lovely resort, but now it's full of garbage, and pirates who kind of worship garbage and want more garbage on the garbage island. And you can get as involved as you want to with trying to turn it back into a 5-star resort by fixing it up, developing areas, and driving the garbage pirates out. And each step of the way, as you get a new star, and you, like, person will come and join the team to help develop a certain area or open up, like, a farming district or, like, so on and so on. Or, like, a kid who can, like, run ads on the radio or TV to, like, boost, like, tourism numbers. And yeah, and then once you fix each area of your island up, you can get a better class of tourist on board who can increase your money and your rating, and you got to keep them happy. And it just, it's a rabbit hole that just goes and goes and goes. And it plugs into the whole Sujimon Pokemon knockoff system as well, because your Sujimon can also work on your farms and help out around the place, and it's a lot. But also, it's Animal Crossing. You can just catch bugs and sell them for money as well.
It rules. Yeah, that's what I really like about this, that every single thing feeds into something else. And I really value that in my RPGs. So yeah, when you're doing Dondoku Island, it's really helping with Sujimon. When you're doing just little mini games, it's helping you cross off your checklist. It's adding your stats up to help do other things later. I just am obsessed with how much better and more authentically this game feeds into everything than other games in the series. I feel like other games with those really long completion lists, they just kind of feel like a bit of a boring checklist that you get tired of after a while. This one, less but so.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how a game that on the outset seems like it's made of so many disparate parts, they actually are quite cohesive, even though they're so many of them are so tonally disparate. Even just the fact that all of this stuff makes you money, and money can make fights easier because you can hire, you know, support characters to come in and do a massive amount of damage or heal you a bunch, or everything is just kind of useful towards the core.
Yeah, and I think those are some of my favorite games of all time, of any genre, is where they've got some of these, as you say, disparate elements that perhaps on the surface look a little bit at odds with one another, but sort of feed into one another, you know, quite well for, you know, a cohesive experience. So that's really encouraging to hear. I'm really curious to hear, Charlie, of all the Yakuza Like a Dragon games that you've played, where would you say Infinite Wealth sits in terms of?
I had a feeling this is coming up. definitely up there for me. It has issues for sure, but most of them melt away when you play the game. Probably like second or third highest, I would probably say. So up there with the likes of stuff like Yakuza 0 and stuff like that. I think the story in the first of Ichiban's stories in Yakuza Like a Dragon is a bit more tighter, but I also really liked it in this game. It kind of developed in really interesting ways. So yeah, definitely up there for me.
And when you say, you know, some of the issues, I know we've touched on some of the sort of pacing and story issues. What were some of the issues that you encountered?
One or two threads kind of resolve a little too quickly, I found, without spoiling too much there. Yeah, and it's tricky because it does feel very up itself a little bit with the Kiryu stuff and how it tells all of that. I ate that up absolutely because I love him and I love those games, but it is kind of jarring seeing that when you're going through and trying to play this game that you believe to be one where it's all about the new kid on the block and all about passing over that torch. I find that kind of grating sometimes, but worth it at the end.
And Jam, how would you summarize your time with Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth?
I found the first few hours a little frustrating because it was, I mean, this sounds ridiculous to say because it is a sequel, but how much that it was a sequel to the prior game. And I also felt just in general it was slower to get to the open world. Okay, go kids, have fun. Than previous games and series that I played. That said, like the majority of it was like the creamy middle, and it was fantastic. And I spoke on my issues with the last few hours of it. But yeah, it's still not my favorite game from the studio. That's still Fist of the North Star, Lost Paradise, which I hope more people play.
I criminally haven't played that one. I need to. It's like the only one I haven't.
Deep cut. I like it.
And you don't need to be super familiar with the anime to play it either. It's great. But yes, that's beside the point. Look, I loved it. I just, as I tried to state up front in my review, it's just like, I think you've got to be pretty invested in the series, or at least have finished the previous game to really be able to get a whole lot out of it. Or just be prepared that there will be several hours long stretches where you'll kind of have to throw up your hands and go, okay, I guess this guy is a guy and they have a relationship and cool.
Goodness. So ultimately, Jam, would you drop or rate Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth?
I would rate it, but just with a caveat of knowing what you're getting into.
Same to you, Charlie. Would you drop or rate Infinite Wealth?
Wholeheartedly rate it, yeah.
That's Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth from Ryuga Gotoku Studios, a wonderful follow-up to the Like a Dragon from a few years ago, and certainly a lot of game if you like big RPGs.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
This has been Drop Rate by Sifter, a video game review podcast. Jam, where can people find more of your work?
Because I'm freelance, so you can find it kind of everywhere. But I think my last piece was for Kotaku Australia, and my next one should be as well. And I'm going to have a thing on Press Start for the first time next week. But yeah, follow me on Twitter at JamWire, and you'll see me banging on about everything.
How about you, Charlie? Where's the best place to find your work?
Basically, anywhere on Checkpoint Gaming. I am the person that reviews probably too many things. So at CheckpointAU on Twitter and Instagram. For Facebook, it's Checkpoint Gaming.
And Sifter is produced by Chris Button, Courtney Barrett, Kyle Pauletto, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Daniel Ang, and Adam Christo. Mitch Lowe is senior producer, and Gianni DiGiovanni is our executive producer. Thanks to Brian Fairbanks from Salty Dog Sounds for composing the theme music. You can check out what Sifter is up to on our socials, which is at SifterHQ on YouTube, Twitter, Insta, Blue Sky, whatever else is still running by the time this goes out, or hop into the Sifter Discord, which we'll drop a link to in the show description. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.
Hey there, Gianni here on the latest episode of Lightmap, Sifter's interview podcast. Trent Custers from Melbourne's League of Geeks joins me to share the pretty candid story of how their studio almost came to its end.
The thing that I said to Blake, who's the game director on Jump Light Odyssey, and you know, we've got to remind ourselves, is that it literally was just a logic puzzle. Like, we did not have enough money to take one team all the way through till, say, late 2024, which is the amount of time that Jump Light Odyssey needed to be completed. We've got to put this one game that's already out there that has a bunch of potential, and then invested in this other game that, you know, very clearly, because we can see the wish list doesn't have as, and it's always been the case, like Solium Inferno is the weirdo strategy game, right? It was never the commercial front runner out of the two. You know, you don't get to pick and choose. It actually, the decision is made for you.
You can get every episode of Lightmap for free on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on YouTube, or head to our website, sifter.com.au.